Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Chris Cameron, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltema, and our guest this week, Katie Hogendam. Katie, since I had the pleasure of working with you on Plan X at the Festival of the Arts back in October, let's start with that. Why did you write Plan X, and can you tell us a bit about that?
I had always wanted to write a play. I think the last play I'd written was in 1992 when I was 12.
So you had a bit of catching up
yes.
to do.
Yes. Okay. Actually, it began with a workshop we had in our writers group. Marie Lynn Hammond, who is, among other things, a playwright, she led a workshop on 10-minute plays, which are sort of, abbreviated one-act plays. And it was inspiring. And after that workshop, my husband had the kids, so I went to the Black Cat in Kohlberg coffee shop and thought, this sounds fun. So I did it. and then when Spirit of the Hills asked for submissions, I thought, well, okay, what do I have to lose? So I did, and was really shocked and happily surprised when it was accepted. And getting to know you as my director was a phenomenal experience.
The play was a great success, the Festival of the Arts. But I'll bet you enjoyed seeing it actually, your words come to life on the stage. Did you?
Absolutely. And the actors were fabulous. It was really sort of an out-of-body experience in a way. It was beautiful. The actors did a fantastic job, and it was lovely to see words come alive in that way, sort of take on, three dimensions. Yeah.
So have you got a plan? Have you got a plan to write any more plays? Plan Y, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. I really would love to. Yes, absolutely. Not Plan Y. I think we'll leave the folks in Plan X where they are. But yes. That is a plan that I have.
That's great. I'd love to hear about it when you get going on it. If I can shift gears just a little bit. In fact, shift gears a lot. I've heard that you'd like to explore setting up a women's cooperative press, and you're discussing a women's arts collective with a friend. Why do you think such organizations are necessary? What might be their special contribution in communities like ours?
Yes, I guess specifically I was speaking with my friend Shannon Linton, who is among other things, an amazing musician. But she donated her time to the release of my chapbook, Mother Tongue, a few years ago, and we collaborated together on that. And in that collaboration, she brought up the idea, what do you think about a women's arts collective? There's so many talented women here in Northumberland County in particular. And as the director of song, she already has the sort of altruistic bent where she wants to help folks out. So she's through Songs at Sounds of the Next Generation, she's helping children sort of get in contact with other mentors to help, to bring them together in the choir. So this was sort of a logical next step for her, the idea of women helping women as artists. And that's right up my alley. That's exactly the kind of thing I'm into. So we've been talking about that for a while, but really getting a little bit more serious. And as I'm preparing to pull together this next poetry project, we're kind of considering that under that umbrella, possibly. So yes, and in terms of the press, I think we're really fortunate to have a variety of small presses around here. And I wish that we had something that was a little bit more focused on not necessarily just women's work, but I think there's a niche in there that I would love to see filled, not necessarily by me, but I want it to exist.
It sounds like a fantastic initiative, in fact. We could explore it just a bit more, if you don't mind. I'm curious as to the idea of people seem to be moving towards gender neutral and gender non-specific. You obviously see a niche for gender specific artistic endeavors as well. Is that true?
Or
just for the support of them, perhaps?
Yes. I think ultimately what I love is the idea of the analog and of humans helping humans. And one of my greatest inspirations is a woman named Gwen Frostick, who started a printing press in my hometown, Beulah, Michigan, almost 100 years ago. She is a naturalist and a poet. And when she pulled it together, it was during the war, and she literally was she was living near Detroit, I believe, at the time, scraping through garbage bins looking for pieces of copper and metal, because metal was being used for the war. But she created her own printing press, first in her house, and then expanded and brought it to Beulah eventually, where she printed her own books of poetry and sort of nature-focused writing. And as a child, that had a deep imprint on me. She was committed to the environment, and she was committed to her vision for her art. And I think that there are a lot of people, specifically women, but also other minority groups, who have a lot to say, and maybe what they have to say doesn't fit into the mainstream publishing model. So what I would like to see is those underrepresented groups having the space and the resources to get their stories out, because ultimately our society becomes the stories that we bring to it. And if only the sort of overarching dominant story is the only one that's being told, that is the only story that our children will learn. And so I feel that women and minorities, people of all genders really, but underrepresented groups, I would love to see an actual physical bricks and mortar printing press that puts those stories out there for people to, you know, to easily access, so that it doesn't remain a niche thing, to challenge the dominant culture.
Something we haven't touched on, which I know you're also involved in, is nonfiction writing. And did you bring anything that you could read for us of nonfiction nature?
I have contributed creative nonfiction to a variety of different journals, and I had it on my bucket list to have something published in a magazine that I've followed for a long time, and it's called G's Magazine. It's actually a Canadian publication, G-E-E-Z. And I thought I'd bring an excerpt from the article that sort of got the most press or whatever.
Love to hear it.
Yeah. And it's been reprinted in several different places, so there must be something that people like. So it's called Community is Bullshit, and it's in a progressive Christian literary magazine, so I think it's all right here. And I began with a quote from a female pastor named Nadia Boltz Weber from her book Pastrix. And she says, "God, please help me not to be an asshole," is about as common a prayer as I pray in my life. The year is 2001. Professor John casts his gaze across the batch of eager new students and, pausing for dramatic effect, calculates the veracity of our idealism on some internal register built upon years of guiding sanguine undergrads. "Community is bullshit," he grunts, turning away without explanation. 20-year-old me is indignant. Had this professor, this Christian professor, really said what I think he said? After countless months of courting financial aid advisors, several hours on a plane, and interminable minutes inching along a mountain pass with the simple goal of sitting cross-legged on the floor of that room, a former logging camp cookhouse turned campus library, a supposed mecca for pilgrims of my theological bent, a haven for skeptics and Jesus freaks alike, I was in no mood for irony. I was here for community, damn it, and these professors better well be dishing it up as their pamphlets promised. As it turns out, my professor's words were prophetic. Though some of the best months of my life would be spent with these people, by the end of the semester my cabin had split, our little cadre disemboweled by petty arguments and arrogant presumption. My roommate moved in with her Mennonite cum postmodern artist boyfriend. Another retreated mysteriously into the forest with a sleeping bag and her unfinished novel. And a third enlisted her girlfriend to hunker down in the tiny bedroom adjacent to the kitchen, materializing only for water and Discman batteries. By that time, our hope for utopia was a long gone notion. We came with big dreams of common vats of hummus, late nights over yerba mate and clove cigarettes, and long hours spent dreading one another's hair. These things did happen, don't get me wrong, but a vat of hummus and a head of dreads does not a community make.
Thank you so much, Katie. Where can we find this piece of nonfiction?
Yeah, so this one, they published a selection of some of their articles online. So I think they did at one time, at least. You can see this one online. So I think if you go to GEEZ.com, G's Magazine, Google G's Magazine and Community is Bullshit, and you'll find my name.
Sounds
just
great. About your other writing, I was going to ask about your chapbook, Mother Tongue. Is that available for purchase by people? And if so, where?
Yes. So it was sort of a limited run handmade chapbook, but there are a few left. Black Cat Cafe in downtown Coburg has several copies, and as does Let's Talk Books in downtown Coburg, and I believe that's it.
Many thanks to Katie Hogendam for catching us up on her recent work, and thanks for coming in, Katie.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.